Back on the Hal Ginsberg Morning Show. That's what you want, right, Douglas? You want the happy.
No,
you want me to come on the air and say, oh, yeah, Bernie's going to win. We all got to join hands and make a circle around the campfire, and we're going to win. And since Hal won't say that, I don't want to listen to him anymore. I'm turning him off. I'm going to go do, I don't know, whatever you do. Is that right? Did I nail that? I did, right? Right, Douglas?
You are so wrong. But let me tell you something. It's not happy. This is how we're going to do it. It's going to be a struggle. It's an uphill climb, and this is what we're faced with. I mean, the same issues for bringing on a black president. You don't understand, and your ilk does not understand the significance of and where America was to the point where I'm not looking at this negatively. I'm looking at this positively. They just said, you know what, the black guy's got the better message.
That's why I support him. Wait, Douglas, you didn't listen to me. You weren't listening to my show in 2008, but I was doing shows in 2008, and every single day I came on the air and I said, this is the best guy for America, and here's why. And I went right to his rhetoric and to his votes, to the fact that he had opposed the Iraq war at the time of the war and that Hillary had supported it. And it wasn't just that. I thought he was better on health care. He basically adopted to some degree Hillary's policies, though, with the mandate. But at the time, I preferred his rhetoric. I thought he was a more liberal candidate. He was a more liberal senator. He had a more liberal voting record than Hillary Clinton at that time, and still does, by the way. So, yes, I supported Barack Obama, and it really wasn't I thought he was the best candidate. It was simply that. Is it the fact that he's black is a bonus? I'm glad we have a black president, but that wasn't the reason I supported him. If he had been Alan Keyes, if he had been Herman Cain, I wouldn't have supported him. So that's why I voted.
So the people didn't sit down. I mean, Barack Obama burned the people. He burned his constituents. He burned, the liberal and the progressive. But America was liberal and progressive enough to the point that they're going to vote for this guy. And he gets in office and screws the people over. He watches Fox News, too.
And I want to be fair to him because
him and his group,
Douglas,
him and his group watch Fox News every day. And
Douglas.
Voted. And I want to tell you this now. We had a majority Democrats in the Senate and majority Democrats in the Congress. He could have went bull roughshod over any legislative initiatives that the Democrats decided to do. But he was watching Fox News. That's how we got the black woman fired from her agricultural job.
That was a terrible, terrible mistake, and it was wrong-headed what they did, where they fired that poor woman, who, by the way, had been a great advocate for poor folks and getting those bridge loans that they need, regardless.
I'm with you too.
To some degree, but look, let's not totally bash him. He did bring the Affordable Care Act to the people, and it has made a difference. It has made lives better. The stimulus is better than what we would otherwise have. Tax rates are slightly higher on the wealthy than when he took office. Yes, in many areas he's been a disappointment. No argument at all. But what is that? But don't say I'm a Hillary Clinton supporter. That I love Clinton. I don't. I support Bernie Sanders. I've criticized Hillary Clinton virtually since I first came on the air. So we agree on everything. The only area we don't agree is you are mad at me because yesterday when I was in a bad mood, I was depressed, I was distraught, I was disconsolate because of the TPP. I was like, there's nothing we can do. Well, I don't feel quite as down right now. All right? Now, does that satisfy
you? Well, let me tell you something. The TPP kicked us all in the stomach and the sides. In America, conservative red state, blue state didn't want this action. But the system is so huge. It is so big. It is so dishonest that it was able to happen with a Democratic president, with that, Debbie Schultz, with Nancy Pelosi, with these people. You know, and it's like so. Now we got to fight again. We are the boxer, the America. And I'm not just talking about liberals and the Democrats because America voted for Barack Obama, so obviously America is left of center. We are the boxer. It's just it keeps getting beat down, and I mean, and we're running out of rounds. You know, I mean, if we're going to do something, it has to be something so down the road that it's got to be at this point Sanders.
All right, you feel, you have said that I am not, what's the right word, aggressive enough, assertive enough, confident enough that Sanders can win, and you point to President Obama's victory in 2008 as proof positive that an underdog, even a black guy, can win. So if he can win, then so can a socialist.
And we're not saying a black guy in pejorative terms. We're because of America.
No, of course, of course, of course, of course. I mean, but I'll be honest with you.
I always have to explain that for myself, too, you know? Like, I'm not saying it in a pejorative term, but yeah, even now, America rejected Hillary Clinton 8 years ago.
No, and that was a great thing. No argument.
With an option, they'll do it again.
Spoke volumes. I'm with you.
You're going to be surprised when these first caucuses come up, and she is not going to win them.
I got to tell you what.
The caucuses are to the ground.
I think there were certain advantages that then Senator Obama had versus Bernie Sanders, and they were very significant. Now, I understand that's Monday morning quarterback. Yeah, I can go back and look. Well, this is why it was different in 2008. But I will just point something out to you. A lot of liberals, and I'm not giving up on Bernie. I support Bernie. I want him to win. Do I think he has a puncher's chance? Do I think he has a puncher's chance? I think he has a puncher's chance.
It doesn't have to be said. You said, I like Bernie Sanders, and I want him to win. Bernie Sanders, sorry. Poor
Bernie. No, I heard, I do that too. I think he's got, but here's the latest, all right, there are two polls that are out right now. The CNN poll in New Hampshire, the bordering state, the neighbor state, and Sanders' weaknesses, and I think this is terrible. I don't get this, Douglas, but the minority communities, the people of color, do not embrace Bernie Sanders. And I actually understand
it. They don't know Bernie Sanders, and let me tell you.
They don't, that's right.
This is where you have to be alternative news. I mean, you got to make sure you say, this came from CNN. CNN is owned by, you know, you have to say CNN is owned
CNN,
by.
CNN had a poll that the CNN, okay, fair enough. And you know what?
I mean, the system is for Hillary.
Sanders.
Push Hillary. Sanders want Hillary. The telecommunications people want Hillary. They owe her because of the Telecommunications Act that Clinton passed.
But
so
doesn't.
That's who you're always going to hear.
Absolutely.
Poll, kicking you the ball.
All right. But
let me tell you something. Our options aren't with Hillary Clinton.
Douglas.
The minority community. Go ahead.
Doug, CNN has Clinton only up by 8. So CNN, the corporatist CNN news organization, actually has Sanders closer than any other poll. But the Bloomberg St. Anselm poll, and you could say, well, Bloomberg is a corporatist too. I get that. But St. Anselm College, I presume, is relatively, what's the word I'm looking for? Relatively unbiased, I hope. I don't know. They have Clinton with a 32% lead in New Hampshire. So we've been going to one positive.
We're being fed, and we're being shoveled our new president. I mean, that's what's being done, you know. And I'll send you some comparative polls where they're telling you the black guy, he's so far behind. Oh, the black guy.
No, it wasn't the same. Look, the truth is that it was never a case where Hillary Clinton had some kind of insurmountable lead. I think there was, I agree with this, there was a general consensus among the chattering classes, the political punditry, that she was going to win. I remember Hannity had his the Stop Hillary Express. Okay? Well, that definitely was the sense that Clinton was going to be, HRC was going to be the candidate. And they were wrong. But right now, Bernie Sanders is a much bigger long shot than Obama was 8 years ago.
I volunteered for this. I actually called you to listen to this. And I'm with the people. I'm with MoveOn.org. I'm going with all the groups that's going to say, in the first two or three caucuses, Bernie's going to win, obviously, because he's to the ground. Hillary messaging, she got away with this, not even mentioning TPP. And it was one of the biggest fights going on, you know.
Well, I'm with you. I can't stand her. I don't want her to win. I'm so opposed to Hillary Clinton. I even said it on this show. I would consider, if it was Jeb Bush, I would consider voting for him. I have a caller who said, you know what?
You're trying to tell me that we can't do better than George Bush Sr., than George Bush Jr., than Hillary, than Bill Clinton, than his wife, and then Jeb Bush again.
I hope we can do better. I hope we are. I hope we can. I do. But I don't know that.
The system, when you take a look at the system, yeah, but that's why, you know, that's why you have this voice. That's why you have this, you know, you have to steer. You have to educate. You have to steer people and go, this is what the corporate media has given us today, our fodder. You know, I mean, this is the fodder that we're being fed today, that somehow they're going to keep giving you these polls so that when you go to the early states, that this is what they're going to follow the polls. So let me tell you something. The system's rigged.
I'll tell you what.
All right,
Douglas.
We're ruining the pork industry or the pork farmers in Costa Rica, how it works, right? I did.
I'll tell you what. I got to let Douglas go. I'll talk about his email briefly on the other side, and I'll be back in 2 minutes. Thanks for listening to The Morning Show. So thank you, Douglas, for a great call. Solar Czar apparently enjoyed it as well. You have an intelligent listening audience, says Solar Czar. Well, I would assume that's correct. It is. In fact, I know it's correct based on the calls. And I don't get, and I will say this, Jeff, Columbus Jeff, not right wing, well, he is, well, Columbus Jeff is intelligent, but I don't understand. Here's where I think there's the disconnect. The taxing and spending clause, the tax and spend clause of the Constitution specifically provides that Congress shall have the power to tax the people to promote the general welfare. So I absolutely perceive providing inexpensive or free baseball tickets to poor people as promoting the general welfare. I think I benefit when poor people get to go to games that they could otherwise not afford. I definitely view that as improving my welfare. I don't live in a bigger house, doesn't give me more money, nothing. Just results in a slightly less dissatisfied, a slightly less angry, a slightly less malcontented citizenry. It's a little tiny step, a baby step towards fairness, towards justice. And that makes me feel as though my welfare is improved. And that the whole country's is, in fact, improved. Jeff doesn't see it that way. There's no way we can change each other's minds. He doesn't gauge welfare by whether there's a, you know, a little bit of a reduction in the hard edges that are jabbing and cutting and hurting the poor people who have less of a cushion, who aren't sitting on nice cushions. For him, sanding off those rougher edges for some people doesn't make life better for all. For me, it does. He might say, well, hell, I'm all. So therefore, it doesn't promote the general welfare because I say it doesn't, and it doesn't improve my quality of life. And I would say, yeah, well, you know, I understand for you it doesn't improve your welfare, but I think the general welfare doesn't just limit itself to whether you personally feel better. It's whether the society as a whole has a little bit less anger inside. There's a little less tension, a little less steam building up, a little less pressure. And I think that even just a little sort of a little bagatelle, like getting some free baseball tickets in the mail that you weren't necessarily expecting, I think that does just alleviate some of the anger that we have, the resentment that people very fairly have about unfairness and injustice and poverty. And I think that does promote the general welfare, even if you personally don't feel that you're better off. So I guess that is something that we can never agree on. There's no evidence, no data that would persuade you that I'm right. There's no facts that I could present to you that would cause you to say, oh, yeah, I got it. I had my little epiphany. I see what Hal's saying. And you know what, Jeff? There's really nothing that you could show me that would cause me to feel differently either. There's no way that you could persuade me at this point that maybe if some poor kid, some kid who really never gets to go out, you know, some 8, 10, 12-year-old who loves to watch baseball at home on TV, would love to go to a park, but who can't afford it, whose parents can't afford to take him, who sees the people walking by his house, walking by the rental, as they're on their way to the yard, in their regalia, there's nothing that's going to persuade me that making available some pretty darn good seats every once in the blue moon for that kid isn't improving the quality of life in America as a whole. So I guess we're just going to have to agree to disagree, and we'll just have to duke it out at the polls, and hopefully, for my sake, I'll win, and obviously, from your sake, you hope you'll win. But there's nothing that's going to persuade either of us. All right, from Erica. And by the way, Erica, thank you for listening, and thank you. I love to hear from you. It's always nice to hear from listeners who periodically check in, but not all the time. This is the problem with polls. Oh, I have to get to Douglas's email, too, about the – I think it's about NAFTA and also about MFN for China. We'll get to that in just a moment. But the reason that, I guess, Erica sent me the problem with modern polling is because I cited to – the latest Bloomberg St. Anselm poll in New Hampshire, which basically is over the same period of time, calls made over the same period of time as a CNN poll. CNN poll, many on the left citing as evidence that Bernie is really closing, that Bernie is hot, that Bernie is poised to upset Clinton, only down 43-35 in New Hampshire. But a concurrently polled result comes up with a 32-point lead for Clinton. So where do I think they are? Probably somewhere between 32 and 8. It's probably more like 15 to 20. That would be my guess, but I don't really know. From Erica, though, the problem with modern polling, I haven't read this, but, oh, she's saying, well, one problem is that the pollsters don't call cell phones enough and they don't reach a lot of younger voters. And maybe that's true. You know, maybe there's a good point there. Maybe the polls do skew older and skew whiter and skew richer. I'm willing to buy that. On the other hand, Nate Silver and Article Man both nailed the 2008 and 2012 elections, and neither one really overstated Obama's support. They both looked at the polls and they said, yeah, Obama's going to win. And maybe Silver slightly understated it, but not by much. Article Man nailed it exactly right just by looking at the various polls. So if the polls are systematically understating liberal support, we're not seeing it. We're not seeing it in results. If polls were systematically understating liberal support, then we would see liberals upsetting conservatives, and we're not seeing that. In the last election cycle, 2014, we saw just the opposite. In what was expected to be a relatively close Senate election season, with the balance of the Senate poised between cons and libs, between Republicans and Democrats, we saw a Republican surge. If the polls were skewed righty, and in fact results generally did not reflect, the poll results did not reflect the support for Democratic candidates from people who don't have, say, a home phone, who are relying upon cell phones, for example. If the polls did not reflect those voters sufficiently, then we would not have seen a wave Republican election in 2014 when it was not predicted. So I do largely believe the polls. Not 100%. Got to weigh them. There are outliers. There are all different ways that you can gauge the accuracy of one poll versus many. But to say that polls systematically systematically understate support for liberals is not the case. Let's go to the phones. Caller, you're on with Hal. Who's this?
Good morning, Hal. How are you this
I'm
today?
Well, Marie. Great to speak with you. How are you?
I am pretty cool. Apparently, they struck down the state ban on marriage equality.
Is that just came out? Yes, I just see it. Supreme Court extends state same-sex marriage nationwide. So that's a great decision. That means everywhere in this nation, if you want to marry someone of your gender, can do so. That's wonderful. This is a great decision.
Yeah, I wonder what Scalia's dissent will be.
His head is largely exploded by now. And by the way, how could it, you know, when something explodes, it gets bigger and bigger. His head is so big. It's already so enormous.
Yeah, along the lines of Barry Bonds, so.
Are you saying he is a juicer? Is that your point?
Well, he hasn't hit many home runs lately.
No, Scalia has not. He has not hit many home runs. So how do you feel right now, Marie? Do you feel somewhat more embraced by America today? I mean, this goes to gay rights as opposed to transgender rights, but certainly we do lump them together. So.
Because of the Sixth Court, marriage between a man and a transgender was considered not legal, so it does involve transgender people pre-ops. And post-op.
So wait, so explain. Does this say that transgendered people can marry anyone they wish to marry who wishes to marry them, or no?
Yeah, at this point they can.
Okay.
But, in the Littleton decision in the Sixth Appellate Court, they had said that a man is a man no matter any surgical intervention. So most didn't know it, but even post-op transgenders that got married there, in the court of law, it would have been declared null and void.
All right, I'll tell you what. Stick with me, Marie. We got a break. I'll be back. She'll be back. All right, so just to get this clear, Marie, the song there by the Kinks, I guess it's Ray singing, Ray Davies, talking about Lola. Today, Ray could meet Lola, who turns out to be either a transvestite or transgendered person, may have had some type of surgery or some other medical treatment to change gender. You're saying, and I know you're not a lawyer and all that, but you're playing one on the radio today, this great decision by the Supreme Court, 5-4, extends the right to marry such that Ray Davies in that song could marry Lola as long as they're not, say, brother and sister or some other very close relationship that's otherwise banned.
Yeah, something along that lines. And you played the American version. They had to go back into the studio and re-record it for the BBC version, which instead of saying Coca-Cola, they say Cherry Cola.
Why? Because people don't drink Cherry Cola here, or it has to do with some sort of a sexual references?
No, Coca-Cola would have been an advertisement for a drink, and BBC doesn't allow advertising. So
That's interesting, because it's not really an advertisement. Do you feel like that? Do you think, did the Kinks get something from Coke for putting it in the song? Probably not. I doubt they did. Who knows?
No, they didn't, but I do have both versions.
But in the Who Sell Out, right, the album The Who Sell Out, they've got Heinz Baked Beans. They got songs there for Heinz Baked Beans. Oh, but that was all played on pirate radio, right? That would explain. The BBC wouldn't play it. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so that makes sense. Perfect. Well, you explained a lot, and I appreciate that, Marie. All right, Marie, you do not agree with my plan, my program, to require baseball team owners to give away free seats to their games. Is that right? You do not agree with it. You think it is a wrong-headed.
Unlike you, unlike you, I did a little research into the MLB community outreach programs, and
yes.
many teams do provide free tickets and instruction and care of some baseball teams. The Yankees maintain some of the fields in Central Park and that kind of stuff.
And that's good, and I don't doubt that. You know, one thing I've noticed is a lot of times the athletes are so much more generous than the teams. I mean, these athletes go out of their way. Some of them you see the ads and they go, you see them in some St. Jude's hospital, which is beautiful that they do that. But a lot of these guys, they set up foundations and they don't brag. They don't pat themselves on the back. So they're far more generous than the billionaire owners, the millionaire players who can't, I mean, they can afford it. I'm not saying they can't, but they're often far more generous than the owners. I'm glad that the teams do outreach. That's nice. They don't do enough. They just don't. There aren't enough seats given away, and they don't do it on a consistent basis. So that's my issue there, Murray.
Yeah, and I'm going to throw you another curveball kind of in the Herb type thing. In yesterday's decision about the housing, Clarence Thomas, in his dissent, said that we don't need to bother with that stuff anymore because Major League basketball players are 70% black, and they earn a lot of money, and they can buy houses any place they want. So, really good example.
Do you think I want to bring up I don't know, did you watch the draft yesterday at all? Basketball draft. I don't like to watch that stuff. I think it's so boring. If I want to watch sports, I want to watch a game. I want to watch competition, not names being announced by a bald-headed dude with pointy ears, which is what you got to watch for hour after hour yesterday on ESPN. But I have a question, and this is going to be a little controversial. Some people may get annoyed. I'll ask this to Marie first. There was the first white player selected was Frank Kaminsky, who was the NCAA Player of the Year last year, and he is a very, very good center. I think he was picked 9th. So the Player of the Year went 9. 8 players went before him. I think that is reasonable, although there was one center, Willie Cauley-Stein, who I think is an inferior player, who went much earlier than Kaminsky. The most athletic white guy was a guard, was a guard forward, a swingman, Sam Decker from Wisconsin also. So the two top white players, I think, were American whites, were Decker and Kaminsky. And Decker fell to like 18th, I believe. And the announcers were two of the four who are African-American felt that he was a steal, that he was deserved to be picked higher. And if you watch him, he's very, very athletic. He has great hops. You know, he gets way up in the air, but sometimes would like lose focus and would have games that didn't seem to be as good as he could have played. His achievement, there was an achievement gap. He was an underachiever, which you often see with a lot of these players because they're so young, and if they can jump to the moon, you figure everything else you can teach them. So my question is there reverse racism? Is there a sense now in the NBA among the managers and the general managers and the owners and the coaches that the white players are not as good, that the white player who achieves in college will not perform as well as the African-American player who will perform in the NBA? Is that something that's a real thing that's going on? Do you have any thoughts at all on that, Marie? I know baseball is your sport.
After that long-winded question, I'm going to have to say I don't know anything about basketball except for watching a couple of these recent games because Golden State was in it, kind of thing. So,
well, that was a great, yeah, Golden State.
I might be well-versed in Ray Davies and the Kings and Major League Baseball, but basketball is not my sport. You have to talk with Tim on that.
All right, well, Tim, call in and answer my question. Thank you for the call, Marie. Have a great weekend.
Remember that because the question was so long.
Oh, hey, Marie, I want to see you in Monterey. And you know what? I got to send you an email that I sent out to a couple of people, and I omitted you from the two lists. I'm feeling bad about that, but I'll get that out to you today. Maria,
I'm used to being ignored.
To being omitted. I will rectify that situation. Thank you, Maria. Go ahead.
I'll have to get my red sequin dress out.
You don't have to do that. Please don't do that. Please don't get your dress. I mean, I love the dress and all, but this is in a situation where you need to clean yourself up. Let's put it that way. I think the dress would be inappropriate for the event, which, again, the cookout. Really just talking about the cookout. That's going to be next month, Marie, in Monterey.
Bib overall?
I guess. But I don't think the red sequins would work in that park there. It's kind of dusty and muddy.
I'll clean it like
that. A lot of geese pecking around there, too. All right, Marie, we'll talk to you soon. Take care, and hopefully see her as well in Monterey. Phone number 844-4HALGY, 844-367-4254. Do I think there's reverse racism? I asked that question in the NBA draft. Is there a sense now that white players lack a certain something when it comes to the NBA? That they're intangibles that they don't possess? And I'm going to say I don't think so. I don't think there's reverse racism. I think Decker's a good player, and he might well have deserved to be picked a little higher. I don't think it had anything to do with race. I just don't. I think the teams make mistakes. You know, Steph Curry, the NBA team, the NBA player of the year, he was the seventh pick in the 2009 draft. So he was the best player in basketball last year. He was the seventh pick. You know, there were guys, there was a player named Darko Milicic who was the second pick overall in 2003. He never did anything in the NBA. If you look at the history, there is simply no reason to think that the team owners and the managers are less inclined to pick white players. Now, you can look at that draft. I think it's instructive if you go back to 2009, where the MVP, Steph Curry, was picked seventh, and you look at who was picked ahead of him. So number one was Blake Griffin, who's been a great player. No one could say that was a mistake, although maybe Curry's a little better. Number two hasn't played, Hashim Thabit. I guess he plays a little bit. Nobody's even ever heard of him. He's from Tanzania. Number three, James Harden, another great player. Can't say that was a mistake. And then you've got Tyreek Evans, who's okay. He's no Steph Curry. You've got Ricky Rubio, who's okay. He's no Steph Curry. And you've got Johnny Flynn, who I don't even know if he's still in the league anymore. So clearly, we're not talking about guys who are always getting it right, who are smarty pantses, whether it comes to whites or black. They make mistakes. And I think probably with Decker, he might have been falling a little too far given his skill set, his talent level. All right, let's go. And that has nothing to do with race. All right, if you want to call in, if you want to weigh in, I'd love to hear from you. 844-4-HAL-G. Is there reverse racism in the NBA? Let's go to – now, Julius, you were an outstanding basketball player, right? You were a high school star. People were looking at you as the next Larry. They called you Bird right out on the courts.
I could do some things Michael Jordan couldn't even think about doing. But, you know, I was not consistent, you know, because I'm under a lot of, you know, existential pressure because I'm so incredible. You know, I'm so special, right? But, you know, I'm better at killing than basketball, shooting basketballs, you know. But the thing is, hey, you know, the Chinese sent me a beautiful secret message using Francesca's son in a commercial for a Chinese airlines, right? They want to use Julius Nomics in China, and they want my promise that I won't destroy China if they do so. So, yeah, use Julius Nomics. Wouldn't that be great if they use Julius Nomics? They make heaven on earth. It would just be wonderful. They get rid of all the pollution they have to deal with. And maybe they help me develop the Julius generator. It'd be wonderful, wouldn't it? Hey, that's beautiful about the ruling on what? Gay marriage?
Yes. Gay marriage, yes. Legal throughout throughout the land. Throughout the land.
That's 100% because of me. And not, you know that ruling yesterday about Obamacare? That's really the Supreme Court upholding the constitutionality of Julius Nomics. I mean, Judge Roberts made that crystal clear secretly, but not that secretly, if you're paying attention. He echoed my logic about the Constitution, right? And what was the, oh, that ruling about the housing, that is so perfect for me. I'm trying to get a new apartment, right? I got this voucher. You know, the government's going to pay like 70% of my rent, but nobody will take the voucher.
Hold on a sec, Julius. Hold on, because I tell you what, we got a break. I want to hear more about that. I want to talk about the voucher. We got Julius. It's the free for all. Give me a call, 844-4-HAL-G. Julius coming up on the morning show.
It's against the law. It was against the law. Oh, what your mama saw. It was against the law.
All right, back on the Hal Ginsberg Memorial Show. Julius, hanging with me. I believe I see you're still here with us, Julius. Julius, with that voucher, you said it pays for 70% of the cost of the apartment. Now, I assume you can afford the 30% because in Los Angeles, yeah. Right, a one bedroom is going to be $2,000, isn't it? Is that about right?
No, they got a lot for, well, allegedly, you know, who knows? But they advertise a lot. You know, for less than $1,000. But, you know, it seems to me like they do a lot of bait and switching. You know what I mean?
I can't believe you can get a one bedroom in Los Angeles for, I mean,
well,
that's
a studio.
Yeah, studio, maybe. Okay. Now, what about.
All I need is a.
Can you work? I mean, or do you work? Are there jobs? I mean, what's your situation that way? Because I know people would say, I'm wondering, like, well, I'm happy if you. I'm happy to help you out and you should have a place to live, but are there jobs out there for you?
I do volunteer work for the KGB and the CIA. But anyway, hey, you know, I want to talk to Runt Owens. You know Runt Owens on KGO?
Never listened to his show ever. He's on, right? I guess he's on after me. Is that right? I never, ever listened.
Yeah,
I listened
once.
I didn't think it was any good. I wasn't impressed.
He's afraid to compete with you, yeah. But anyway, so, you know, he was wondering about the people that were killed in that church. Like, why are they so forgiving? I would say the reason they're so forgiving is because, you know, they're really connected to reality. They know their loved ones are still alive. They're going to see them again. You know what I mean? And some people were complaining about how the people in that church, they just let themselves be shot. I think they wanted to be martyrs for Christ.
No, I don't believe that. Oh, come on. That's nonsense. I'll let you go. I only people want to be shot. I don't buy that. No, Jules is going to be mad because I hung up on him. But, you know, that's ridiculous. I think that people are very religious, and I'm assuming that those family members who were forgiving, I don't know what. I can't get into their heads. But, you know, I think it has to do with some view of Christ and Christ-like behavior, which includes turning the other cheek. There are crazies out there who want to blame the victims. And a lot of that's racism. It's the black person's fault no matter what. So a lot of it's racism. If a white person shoots a black person, it's the black person's fault. That's certainly, and you see that all the time with the police shootings. All the time. It's the unarmed black man on the ground, on his stomach, with his hands cut behind his back. It's his fault he got shot. You do get that. But I think there's also this sense of a universal desire not to feel that you could be a victim. It wouldn't happen to me. I would do something about it. I wouldn't be shot. I wouldn't be killed. I'd have a gun. And if you blame the victim, and you see this everywhere, you see this with rape victims where people say it's her fault, she was asking for it. And you see women sometimes say, if it's a woman who's been raped, there are going to be some women who are going to say, well, she shouldn't have been in that situation. She shouldn't have been drinking. And part of that is a desire to have control, to believe that life really isn't, and death isn't out of our control, that there are things we can do. If we just don't go to that fraternity party, we won't be raped. If we just don't drink that extra drink, we won't be violated. If we carry that gun with us to church and we're on ever-present, constant, vigilant alert, we won't be killed. So I think that's a major reason, too, people want to or choose to or opt to blame the victim. I read an interesting, by the way, I do want, again, what do you think? Is there a chance? Do you think there could be a, is reverse racism the right term? I mean, we live in a society that's, you know, I think racism is it's not just bigotry. It's not just prejudice. Racism is a system where you have a group of people who are considered the other, or there could be groups, and they are held down. They are their situation, their position is inferior economically and in terms of influence to other groups as part of a way for there to be control maintained by an elite class. So we see a subordinate position occupied in general by blacks in our society, in part because it maintains unfair, unjust power relations, not just between whites and blacks, but I think more trenchantly between a 1% that is mostly but not exclusively white and everybody else. Racism maintains an unjust power structure. Certainly it was most obvious in the South, where poor whites, white people who were looked down upon, who were held in contempt by the planter class, the aristocratic class, were willing to vote for, were willing to support with their lives, when it came to the Civil War, that unjust economic system that actually hurt them too. It wasn't just blacks who were hurt, it was also poor whites who were hurt by it. But they were still willing to fight for it, to die for it, because of the racism. So to me, racism is a systemic way for an elite group, an elite class, to maintain power by pointing to a identifiable group of people, a race of people, as inferior. So reverse racism is the wrong term, but is there some sort of reverse prejudice then, where NBA general managers, NBA owners, are less inclined to draft white American players? And I don't think it's true for white Europeans. Lots of white Europeans get drafted. So is this in play? And I raised the question because a couple of white players in the draft yesterday, there were very few, but two of them were drafted, I think, just a little bit lower than their achievements in college would suggest they perhaps could have been drafted. And African-American players who had not achieved as much but were perhaps perceived as more athletic and with more higher end got drafted in front. And I would say with Frank Kaminsky that makes some sense because he is very tall, and he is accomplished, but he's not that strong. That's the big knock. He's not that strong, and he's not that fast. The issue with Sam Decker, it's kind of the opposite. He is that strong. He is that fast. He can jump that high, but he was an underachiever. So are we seeing teams that are maybe less inclined to take a risk with a white player? And I answer my own question by saying, no, I don't believe that's the case. I think they have sophisticated analyses that these teams go through, but they make mistakes. And sometimes players who are drafted very high are not as good as they are anticipated to be, and other times players who are drafted a little bit lower turn out to be the best of all.
So, and Steph Curry, I think, is the example of that. So, you know, I don't think this has anything to do with teams looking at the color of the player. I think it has to do with teams not always being consistent in their draft picks and sometimes making mistakes. Whether mistakes were made yesterday, when it comes to those two players, we'll find out. But we certainly know that in the past, mistakes have been made. Still didn't get to Douglas' email about the pork business, the pig, the livestock business when it comes to pigs in Central America. So I do have to get to that in the last hour. It is the free-for-all. Please call 844-4-HELL-G, 844-367-4254. I'd love to speak with you. And we will have lots more room for your calls, including, I'm hoping, Gabby, who called yesterday, and I couldn't get her call, Harvey as well. You guys are welcome to call. We'll talk about more emails and dogs, too. I had brought up the issue of eating dogs in China and whether there's something different about a dog versus a pig that will be consistent with, of course, the question that Douglas raised, what is happening to the livestock business in Central America because of free trade agreements and specifically the pig business and much, much more. It's all going to be on the Hal Ginsberg Morning Show one more hour this week.
This battle line seems wrong. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds. Are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day.